a sitting president who goes for it without reading the room. We could be talking about Emmanuel Macron's shock dissolution of parliament that this coming Sunday could now usher in France's first far-right government since Nazi occupation. Or we could be talking about a floundering Joe Biden who at 81 had broken his campaign promise to only seek one term in office and who turned in, well, a disastrously weak performance, say the critics, in last Thursday's debate with Donald Trump. Will Biden stay on the campaign trail? What's preventing Donald Trump from returning to power now through the ballot box in November? More broadly, why are voters in 2024 ready to forgive or condone what happened in 2021? With COVID, the climate emergency, superpower tensions with China and Russia, Western thinkers had thought voters wanted to revert back to a strengthening of institutions and alliances. Instead, familiar nativist figures who'd been written off have come roaring back. Why and what's stopping them? Today in the France 24 debate, we're asking if the Democrats are in panic mode. Joining us, Amy Porter, spokesperson for Democrats Abroad France. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Also with us, Davina Frau-Meggs, professor emeritus of American Studies and Media Sociology at Paris Sorbonne Nouvelle University. Your upcoming book?
Disinformation Debunked.
Disinformation Debunked. An American somewhere in Paris, John Rick MacArthur, publisher of Harper's Magazine. Your cover story this month, Resisting Artificial Intelligence. Thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be with you.
And an American in Newcastle, Judah Grunstein, is editor-in-chief of World Politics Review. Good to see you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me,
François. Your reactions on the hashtag F24Debate. Yes, it was enough to send Democrats into panic mode. Joe Biden losing his train of thought, seeming confused at times in Atlanta against Donald Trump last Thursday. Even the post-debate positive spin at time proved awkward.
I can't thank you all enough for staying and for being here and for all your support. Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. Let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do? Lie!
So after that, Joe Biden went on some campaign appearances and everything, but it didn't make up for it, Amy Porter. The verdict was swift. Biden's approval rating going through the floor in the hours that followed the debate. This is ratings compiled by the Bloomberg News Agency. Worse, a YouGov poll for CBS News found 46% of respondents found Trump seemed more presidential. 28% who watched, these are registered voters, said the same of Biden. Is Joe Biden too old to run for re-election?
You know, it's the U.S., so you have to follow the money. I'm not looking at the polls, I'm looking at the donations. And in the hour following the debate, the Biden-Harris campaign had its record hour of donations. And the month of June has also broken a record. They have $240 million of cash on hand. You need money to run a campaign in the United States. People are voting with their wallets. What the pundits say and what the voters say are really, really very, is really very different.
So what, you're saying that debate performance didn't matter?
Well, over history, bad debates have not kept people from getting reelected. George W. Bush had a terrible debate. He got reelected. Barack Obama's first debate was terrible. He got elected. Everyone thought that Hillary Clinton won all three debates in 2016, and she didn't get elected. So I'm not saying that his performance doesn't matter, but in the overall scope of things, the debate is probably not going to have that big of an influence on how people vote.
Speaking to U.S. News channel MSNBC, the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, saying it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition? You agree with Nancy Pelosi?
I always agree with Nancy Pelosi as a good Democrat.
John Rick MacArthur, your thoughts on what transpired last Thursday?
Well, my thoughts about it are, like everyone else's, I was cringing when I watched the highlights or the lowlights of the debate. You know, a lot of mean people put together collages of the worst moments of the debate. It's hard to watch. But this has been known about Biden for a long time, that he's inarticulate. He had a stutter when he was a kid. He's always been dogged by this lack of articulation and precision in his language. It's just that this was more extreme than usual. But it doesn't matter to the people who run the Democratic Party. And you've got to remember that Joe Biden is the boss of the Democratic Party. He's not just the president of the United States. And you think there's panic now? If Biden pulled out, if he actually decided, I'm not up to this, or his wife told him to pull out, then you would see genuine panic in the Democratic Party. Because the last thing they want is to throw the nomination process open again to potential insurgents. There's still a sizable dissident group within the Democratic Party led by Bernie Sanders. And Biden has spent the last 3 years marginalizing Sanders. He's almost destroyed him with the help of Joe Manchin and Charles Schumer. They have a real lock on the Democratic Party right now. They just beat Jamal Bowman in the primary in New York. They're one by one, they're taking out the dissident Democrats. They don't want to open up this process again. So they'll stick with Biden as long as he can stand on two legs.
As long as he can stand on two legs, but there are some words a little bit about contingency plans. Michigan's governor forced to put out a statement to deny moves to position herself as a replacement to Biden. Gretchen Whitmer reportedly calling the White House to insist she's in no way behind draft Gretch moves that have surfaced in the last week. All the while warning it's going to be much harder winning her state, Michigan, which is important. The polls show it's within the margin of error over who's on top. Politico's Jonathan Martin reporting that several Democratic governors are in a holding pattern. He also reported this reaction from a Biden aide. They'd all love an easy sprint, but they couldn't get past Kamala Harris if they even had that shot. John Rick MacArthur, if you're saying there'd be panic, but of course, would it be Kamala Harris who would be the one who would pick up the mantle if Joe Biden were to step aside before the convention in August?
Not necessarily. There's Gavin Newsom, there's Governor Whitmer of Michigan, there's several people who are obvious potential candidates to replace Biden. But again, the bosses, the barons of the Democratic Party do not want a free-for-all. They do not want to reopen the domination process because they fear losing control of the party. They almost lost control of it. Don't forget how close the Sanders campaign came to beating Hillary Clinton. And then he put up a pretty good fight against Biden, too. It took everything they had to stop the Sanders insurgency, which partly is a result of COVID, too. The campaigning essentially had to halt. But they don't want a nomination fight. They don't want to lose control of the party. They would actually rather lose to Trump than lose control of the Democratic Party nominating process, I think. Ultimately, because Trump's transitional. He's in for 4 years. It's not the end of the world. You can make deals with him.
that's the feeling. You agree with that, Judah Grunstein?
Well, I don't see what about his first 4 years in office suggests that he was willing to make deals with the Democrats. He was definitely incompetent and ineffective in pursuing his own most of his legislative agenda. And I think the big fear about a Trump second term would have more to do with things he could do with the executive orders and gutting the administrative bureaucracy of the federal government. I think I think the big problem that the Democrats have right now is that everything about what's just been said about Biden's performance and about the decision making in terms of donations, but also the party leadership, plays right into the hands of all the narratives that Trump and his faction and supporters have really been leaning into about the Democratic Party and about politics in general, and so in a way that I think really sort of weakens some of the strengths that the Democrats had really built up. I mean, when you think about the way they've portrayed the race and the two candidates and the two parties, it's the party that supports truth and doesn't support disinformation and misinformation and that supports democracy versus the candidate and the party that are the opposite of all those things. And all of a sudden on Thursday night, they got into a situation of saying, who do you believe, me or your lying eyes? And they've been trying to portray Biden and, excuse me, I myself have made the case that from everything we've read and everything we've seen, Biden has some recall issues and he has some articulation issues, but it wasn't more than that. And all the clips we've seen were doctored. And I think in live time, in real time, what we saw and what the American people and voters saw was that that's not true. It certainly wasn't true that evening. And if it's just an episode, that still raises some questions about whether he should even be president now. And if it's more than an episode and just characteristic of how he can engage when he doesn't have a teleprompter in front of him, it's even more worrisome. So I think that in terms of the you know, when we get away from spin and get away from image and we get away from the power politics in at the leadership level, I think it's extremely damaging for Biden and for the Democratic Party. After that, I'll leave it at that, but I have read some things that suggest that an open convention or replacing him at this point would not be as catastrophic as been portrayed. But that, maybe we could talk about that more later.
Yeah, certainly those press reports suggest that there are people working on scenarios. Judah, your thoughts on Nancy Pelosi saying, and I'll repeat again what she told the news channel MSNBC. I think it's a legitimate question to say, is this an episode or is this a condition?
Well, again, I mean, excuse me. I remember one of the things I read after Thursday on Friday about the debate was talking about presidents who had awful first debates, incumbents, because they're usually a little out of form and not used to being second guessed and contradicted. And one of the examples was Ronald Reagan in 1984 in that first debate with Mondale, and how he then came back and won the election with his famous quip about how he wasn't going to take advantage of his opponent's relative youth when they asked him about the question of age in the race. What people don't remember, though, is that in his second term, there was serious talk among Ronald Reagan's cabinet of invoking the 22nd Amendment to remove him from office for being unfit. If it's an episode, to begin with, the first thing that any aspiring president, whether out of office or incumbent seeking re-election, first job is to be able to campaign and win the election. And if Biden can't do that physically, that means already right there he's not really fit to seek the office. If what we saw Thursday night was an episode, that again is very alarming. The president of the United States cannot be in a position where, even for a period of 90 minutes, they're incoherent and unable to answer simple questions. And I think that outside of any politicking and any campaign, I think that's an obvious observation. And I think we would be saying the exact same thing and more if it were Trump. Now, Trump has his own things, his own issues that raise questions about his fitness for the job, and no one's ever shied away, certainly not myself or Democrats, for raising them and discussing them. You know, right now, if it's a question of, well, we can't afford to, or there's no time, or this is where we find ourselves, that's not a very convincing electoral argument. It's a convincing power politics argument. But in terms of what you're trying to convey to voters, I don't think it works. And I think, again, it plays into these narratives that the Republicans and Trump have been trying to spread and stick on the Democratic Party in terms of the fix was in against Bernie. They don't really care about democracy within the party. It's all corrupt within the leadership offices. And so, you know, it's not a good look. That's basically all you could say. It's not a good look. It was a disastrous look for Biden. And if the idea is that they're just going to sort of force him through and not really read the room, as you said in your intro, it's an even worse look for the party.
Davina Frameggs, again, I could go back to that CBS News poll that we saw. Actually, a majority of people thought that Biden told the truth more than Donald Trump, yet he didn't seem as presidential. That's not surprising for someone like you who studies these matters.
No, and he doesn't have to seem presidential because he is president. I would like to shift the frame because I think you're being caught by the narrative that is set by the right and that is being played again and again. If you looked at Trump that day, I was mesmerized the same way. I mean, I don't think I could have answered in a real debate to the one lie a minute that Trump was spilling. That creates paralysis of the brain. I don't know if it's a condition, if it's an episode. It's just paralysis.
But Biden did so successfully 4 years ago.
Yes, but I think nobody was expecting Trump to arrive the way he did. I mean, we knew he would do that, but so systematically, not stop for any of the lies he said, using the silent mic trick for his own benefits. Anyways, and what I see is a man who is always with tight lips, looking for revenge. The framing is just as bad on the other side. And so I would hope that the Democrats, after an understandable moment of panic, would start to rally and say, hang on, who are we defending? Whose record are we defending? Can we put in front what Trump has actually not done during his mandate that he said he would do, all the things about the migrants, the wall, et cetera, et cetera? Nada. Afghanistan, nada. And you have somebody who has economics, feminism.
Climate.
Or climate. Thank you, Amy. all aligned properly and at one of the best moments for America. And you're not weighing this? Is he doing this because he's confused? Can you be confused about the climate or about the economy on a lasting time, like 3.5 years? I have my doubts. And so I would like to warn about these set narratives that are being played around and that even the most objective media carries.
But Davina,
you really have to create counter narratives.
You know, these debates, they're about the optics, and the optics are one man who definitely looks more old and tired than the other, despite the facts or non-facts that come out of the mouths of politicians.
This man has a whole cabinet around him that is performing. Clearly the president doesn't decide of everything. So I'm not trying to defend him. He has his age. Ageism is a wrong tack here because Trump is not young. And can we look at other issues that matter more and make sure that the narrative is straightened and we're not an inversion here where the right is managing to make the left that is performing unperform or underperform.
If
can I add something about the optics, since we're still talking about optics?
Sure.
I will say that Biden got off one good line, and it's an important one, because I think Trump was very badly weakened by what I call the Stormy Daniels trial. I don't think anybody cares about him cheating on his accounting or cheating on his taxes. What they care about is that a pornography actress came out of the trial looking far more credible than the ex-president of the United States. I think he was badly damaged by that, very badly damaged. So when Biden said, you have the morals of an alley cat, I said, that hit pretty hard. That wasn't bad. apart from the optics, and I'm not saying it's a good thing that Biden remain, I have my own thoughts about Biden as a good or a bad president, but we have a history of this in the United States. I mean, Woodrow Wilson was completely out of it for the last year and a half in office after his stroke. His wife was president. Edith Wilson was effectively president. Ronald Reagan, in the last couple of years, as my friend from the university there reminds us, was pretty much out of it. And Nancy Reagan had inordinate influence, along with her astrologer, on presidential policy and decisions. Is this a good thing? No. It might be a good thing from the point of view of American government or constitutional, the Constitution and the institution of the Constitution, that we have enough protections that it doesn't matter that much if the president is half gone. But I think, again, what really matters here from the point of optics is within the party. And the party likes Joe Biden. He's exactly the kind of regular Democrat they like. He's very reliable, and he doesn't rock the boat. And he's done a terrific job, in their estimation, of putting down the insurrection led by Bernie Sanders.
Amy Porter, you heard John Rick MacArthur,
yes,
saying there is no contingency plan, no serious one, and that having one, throwing the convention open, would send it into panic. By the way, the last time the Democrats had a chaotic convention was in Chicago,
yes,
in 1968.
Which is where the convention is this year, yes.
You heard Judah Grunstein saying, no, there are people on the quiet who are preparing for that eventuality. I just wanted you to weigh in on that.
I can tell you
break the tie
right now that nobody's talking about that within the Biden-Harris campaign. Okay, like I said, what the pundits say and what the media says, and, oh, my God, it's a horse race, and, oh, my God, look at the polls.
So these governors meeting according
what
to Politico, that's not...
In this race is the stakes of this election, not the odds, not the horse race. And John Rick was right about what he said about the convention, but I disagree with him, his premise that Trump could be president for 4 years, no big deal, we'd go back to normal afterwards. If you look at what Trump's program is, he wants to dismantle American democracy from within, and he got a big boost from the Supreme Court just the other day.
Let's talk about that.
He wants to deport 15 million people. He wants to ban abortion nationwide. I don't care how old Joe Biden is. If I have to be bleeding out in a parking lot because I have sepsis and a doctor is afraid to treat me because he could go to jail.
All right, making Donald Trump's task easier on the campaign trail, the fading prospect of having to sit in a courtroom in the fall. That's thanks to Monday's Supreme Court ruling. Solange Mougin has more.
It is a landmark decision, one that defines the contours of presidential power in the United States. With its conservative supermajority cemented by Donald Trump, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that presidents should largely be immune from prosecution, much to the ire of protesters in front of the court. The ruling is good news for Donald Trump, as it means the cases against him for his role in the January 6th Capitol riots and accusations of his trying to overturn the 2020 election, they're unlikely to go before a jury, and they are likely to be delayed until after the November election. Trump lauded the 6-3 ruling as a great victory for the Constitution and for American democracy on his social media site. For the majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts argued that presidents are unlike anyone else. He wrote in the ruling that the president is a branch of government and that the Constitution vests in him sweeping powers and duties. But the current U.S. President Joe Biden wholeheartedly disagrees. He said the ruling will not only embolden Trump, but it could also be a danger for U.S. democracy.
And it's a dangerous precedent because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone.
Writing for the minority, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote a scathing dissent of the court's ruling. She said the relationship between the president and the people has shifted irrevocably, that the court's decision has now made the president king. above the law.
Is the president king, Judah Grunstein?
Well, obviously, not constitutionally, and he's not meant to be, or she's not meant to be, queen or king. I don't know. I've seen some other analyses of the ruling that are a lot less alarmist than that, and then my initial response. I think that to begin with, there are a number of countries besides the United States that protect the head of state in terms of official policy decisions and official actions as president from prosecution. To give an example, there are a lot of Republicans who feel that the college loan forgiveness program that Joe Biden instituted through an executive order is illegal. And so this kind of ruling clarifies that a good faith decision made by a president on a policy decision as part of their official duties, they can go ahead and make those calls and make those decisions without having to worry afterwards about spurious prosecution. It's then up to the courts in any given case to make a determination about whether a particular action is an official action, whether it is reasonably considered to be an official action, whether it's egregiously illegal and meant to be so, and that sort of thing. So I don't think it's the kind of my understanding is that it's not the kind of blanket preemptive immunity offered to the president. It's more a question of saying, look, there's the president deserves the benefit of the doubt to conduct his or her official duties without fear of prosecution thereafter. And if the courts then decide after otherwise that the action is not, in fact, official business, as an example, then they would certainly have to be accountable for it. As an example, Trump immediately tried to have his conviction for the Stormy Daniels verdict thrown out based on the fact that the conspiracy that he was convicted of took place once he was president. Now, obviously, to my eyes, and I think to the judge's eyes, that's a spurious claim. It was not an official action. It was not presidential policy or U.S. policy. It was strictly.
What about telling people to go fight like? What about telling people to go fight like hell on January 6th? Is that an official action?
Again, for instance, from what I've read about the ruling itself and the interpretations of it, whether or not that is the sort of interference and pressure that he put on Mike Pence as vice president would not be covered by immunity because the Congress has passed laws that outline and direct the vice president's duties. So in other words, it's not an executive branch in the same way, or it's a co-branch in some ways. And so there are all sorts of ways I think that he could still be accountable for what happened January 6th, 2021.
We'll see if that happens. Mm-hmm. Davina Frau-Meggs, you study the digital age, that's your remit, and you study media. Every person is their own brand. Is it favor sort of this concentration of power in individuals' hands? The president of France becoming having more powers, the president of the United States having more powers, and people wanting a strong man or a strong woman.
Yeah, just if I may answer about the Supreme Court, I think the Supreme Court is king at the moment. The checks and balances in the United States, as I've been taught them as a student in France, seem to me totally off kilter, with a tribe of six basically undoing the whole heritage of the 1960s, and a tribe of one and family trying to restore what happened in the 70s and the 90s with the alt-right.
It's pure politics.
And so I think it's graver than that, because it is modifying the balance of powers in America in a way that is not being voted by the people. These guys have been chosen, and actually they betrayed everything they said during their hearing for a nomination, the president, et cetera, et cetera, they've removed. I'm not so much worried about what they're doing to Trump, what they're undoing to federal agencies, to Roe versus Wade, et cetera. They're following their own agenda. This is not an election agenda. This is not a program of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. So for me, this is really capturing power in a very disruptive, long-term way, Trump or no Trump. It's very grave. So is this coming from social media? I'd love to say yes, but no, I'm going to be reasonable. though, yes, social media probably at the moment are lying to their own promise, which was democratizing the social debate and the public debate. They're de-democratizing. Okay, by that I mean that they are being used to disrupt, create distrust, discredit, and destabilize. They are changing the tables on the normal functioning of the parties and the way they do the programming. It's coordinated actions that are not visible because they are taking place online, and they've actually displaced.
But there were congressional hearings about all this after 2016.
They've displaced the center of the Republican Party to its extreme right, and they've mainstreamed that extreme right, and now there's an extreme right. Okay? And that's really a threat for the Republican Party. That's the ones I would be worried about at the moment, and because they are, as you know, totally incompetent and incapable of doing anything against MAGA and the ones who are behind MAGA and who are, you know, much more on the new right and the NatCons and et cetera, and who were behind the Capitol events. So, social media have done something. It's polarized. Polarizing brings white supremacism in the front when it was in the margins. White supremacism says we need a strong man, and they thought it was Trump. There's a debate among them now. Some of them actually called to vote for Biden because they've been so disappointed by the bizarre action, hesitations of Trump during the Capitol insurrection. So, yes, there is a lot of confusion at the moment, and it doesn't benefit democracy.
John Rick MacArthur, when you step off the plane here in France and you see that 10.5 million people voted far right for the first round of legislative elections, is there a parallel to be drawn?
Absolutely. And, you know, the most important change of deputies, as we call them in France, or the most important election was the defeat of, I think it was, is it François Ruffin, the head of the Communist Party?
No, François Ruffin is in the second round. He's got a tough opponent, but he's from the National Rally. I think you're meeting the leader of the Communists, Fabien Roussel. Who was ousted in the first round, a seat that had been held since 1962 by the communists in the north.
Fabien Roussel is what I meant. The head of the Communist Party lost to a National Front. I still call them the National Front. I won't go for their marketing change. The fact that he lost is exactly why Trump won in the United States. The working class in the United States and in France has lost patience with mainstream liberal or mainstream left, in the case of the United States, in the case of France, politics, which has led to deindustrialization, everybody losing their halfway decent paying factory jobs. There's towns in the north of France that look a lot, or cities in the north of France that look a lot like cities I've been to in the United States, in Ohio, upstate New York, just devastated by free trade or alleged free trade policies. So they've had enough. And so they see a strong man like Trump who says, I'm going to fix it. I'm going to, you know, NAFTA is the worst trade deal that was ever conceived, or permanent normal trade relations with China, worst thing ever, which he's actually right about. Le Pen effectively says the same thing. You've been sold out to a bunch of free market, free traders in Brussels, and I can fix it. And of course, she can't. And she can't that easily anyway. And I don't think she believes in what she's saying anyway. And neither does Trump. They don't care about the working class. They care about getting power. But they know how to press the lever that gets these people angry. They say, yeah, the Democrats and the mainstream socialist party of the United States, they've taken advantage of us. They took us for granted all these years. And we're not going to be taken for granted anymore.
Opponents of France's far-right leader warn of a national rally, as it's now called, that could gut institutions. Marine Le Pen answering in kind this Tuesday, alleging that Emmanuel Macron could weaponize the deep state before Sunday's result. Let's listen.
When I read rumors that the president plans tomorrow, meaning 4 days before the second round, to name the director general of the national police, when he was supposed to stay in the position until the end of the Olympic Games, and the director of the national gendarmerie, as well as dozens of prefects and a whole string of people whose goal will be to block, to prevent Jordan Bardella to govern the country as he wishes, I say that's a form of administrative coup d'état.
Is that mirroring what you just heard, Judah Grunstein, or does she have a point?
Well, I'm not familiar with the actual example she's citing.
Emmanuel Macron has not replaced these top civil servants yet. She said herself it's a rumor, but she's accusing the president of plotting an administrative coup.
I mean, it echoes, listen, the idea of a deep state emerged from observers of Turkey and analysts of Turkey. And when the Islamists took power and the Turkish nationalists and secularists sort of used their embedded position within the administrative bureaucracy to kind of hamper Erdogan's agenda. And since then, it became a very, convenient and useful theme, and we've seen it trotted out increasingly over the last 8 years in European and American democracies. The truth is that there is a very significant power within the administrative bureaucracy. Everyone talks about how Dwight Eisenhower took office thinking that he could just give a command like he did in the military and have it carried out by the American government. And he soon realized that you give a command and no one actually does anything in the U.S. government, that the federal bureaucracy is very hard to manage. Same thing in France, where it's much more centralized and in the hands of the government and when there's not cohabitation, the president. The same is true for foreign policy in France as well and in the U.S. If you look, Trump did a huge amount of damage in his first term. But there were a lot of things that he tried to do, and even things that the president has very clear authority to do, that he couldn't. He tried to withdraw U.S. troops from Syria on numerous occasions, and the Defense Department sort of ran interference on it on multiple occasions. There are certain things that are just hard to do, even for a head of state or a head of government, because of the administrative bureaucracy. Now, will Macron sort of take advantage of the fact that he has experience with that bureaucracy from having been president now for 7 years? I mean, as someone who sees the RN, the National Rally's agenda and platform, I hope so. I hope he does run interference, and I hope he uses every tool in the toolkit to block them from implementing their agenda. Is it anti-democratic? Yeah, but there's lots of anti-democratic aspects to Western democracies. Whether it's a two-round first-past-the-post legislative election, whether it's a presidential veto, whether it's the Electoral College in the United States. So again, is it anti-democratic? To a certain extent, but it's part of the democratic game as it's played and as everyone recognizes it. It's the rules of the game. So I think she it's to her advantage to play it up and to use it to sort of wave a red flag in front of her electorate, her voters. But is there really anything to it? Not really. I mean, it's part of the game.
When Davina Framex, first, what you were talking about earlier about how the new tools of communication instrumentalize public public opinion, whip people up into a frenzy, this sort of thing, or send disinformation throughout the system. All this came up in hearings after the 2016 campaign. We then had COVID. And after COVID, people thought, okay, we now know what the dangers are. The world needs to come together to find vaccines and this kind of thing, and then to have more to learn the lessons of what had happened. What's happened? Why are Trump and Le Pen at the gates of power?
Many explanations. Some of them have been said already. I think. The narratives of plot theory are very persistent. So yes, COVID, well, there's big pharma behind, you know. So right away you have a plot theory that there's a group of people who are making money on top of people's sickness. What Marine Le Pen here has been doing, and I detect a little bit of panic maybe in her, is reverting each time of the narrative. So a la Putin, and it's something learned from 2015-2016. You say that the other is doing something that you're planning of doing, okay? So who is planning a coup right now here? I hear her and I'm telling myself, interesting. But this idea that there is a deep state and it's going to be used against the people is, again, she branches on a plot theory. So what she does is a lot of noise. But what happens is that these noises are picked up then on social media, in little echo sphere of people who are not even necessarily Front Populaire, Front National, sorry. They are sent to Front Populaire people. It's dog whistling, you're hearing
this. So they go from the far right to the far left, or to the left-wing coalition.
It circulates because they meet at some of the diagnoses they've been making about the abandonment of some people, the unresolved anger at some key moments like Gilets Jaunes in France or Charlottesville in America. So they're feeding in a very timely way on news that are very recent, to the point that they are rumors and because they're unconfirmed, but they have no problem doing that because what they want is that rumor to reshake their own sphere and a little bit of the undecided on the outer sphere. And it's this little branch, this gray zone of the slightly undecided that might, on a spur of a moment, 3 days before the election, because you're seeing that the timing is coming up. I'm expecting a slew of fake news to come up. Mm-hmm. Beware of audio fakes, because they're going to arrive fast. But they're hoping that, like this, they're going to have people push the panic button, and by winning 2 or 3 percent points, you can win an election.
Yeah, many
and
of those,
you know that.
Many of those seats can be decided by a matter of hundreds of votes, even less.
Exactly.
Amy Porter, how do you break out of the echo chamber? What's your strategy for reaching people who don't all think exactly the way you do?
Well, the Biden-Harris campaign actually has an excellent social media team. We have ads in traditional places. We even have billboards. There are billboards in southern Florida that say, Trump te deportará, he will deport you, in Spanish. Again, our approach is, what are the stakes of this election? What will your life be like on January 20th, 2025, if Trump takes back the White House? Well, you'll be much sicker, you'll be much poorer. Your air
won't be clean.
So
billboard campaigns?
But it's everything. I mean, we have ads on national TV, of course. I mean, it's a 100%. You know,
very
wide.
Very briefly, because we're almost out of time. John Rick MacArthur, in 2024, how do you get your message across?
On TikTok. Really work TikTok, according to my daughters. So I still hope that reasoned arguments in Harper's Magazine will affect people's thinking and their voting. But it's clear that social media is king right now. I mean, social media seems to drive the narrative, the debate more than
it sounds
ever.
Daunting the way Davina described it.
Right, and thanks to Google and the big tech, there are almost no newspapers left or magazines to counter the power of social media. We don't have the influence. The Washington Post is owned by a big tech baron. You know, we don't have the push, the pull, the weight that we used to have in the print media, in the serious media. It's all really a run from Google and TikTok and Facebook and so on and so forth, more and more.
Well, if you want to have an intelligent conversation, you can have it in Harper's. You can have it here. I want to thank you so much for joining us, John Rick MacArthur, Judah Grunstein in Newcastle, Davina Frau-Meggs, Amy Porter. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.